94.5 WELY, this is Brett Ross with our weekly Wilderness Update, brought to us by the BWCAW Coalition and funded by Lake County and St. Louis County. Here today to talk about aquatic invasive species and how they affect the waters here in Minnesota. I'm joined by Burnside Lake Association resident and trained AIS detector Reynold Mack and University of Minnesota Extension educator from the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center, Megan Weber. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you both for joining us. It's a little unorthodox to have two guests at the same time, but I think you two sort of complement each other with what we're talking about today. We're talking about aquatic invasive species. We'll start with Megan. If you can give us a little bit of your background and talk about some of the specifics of the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center.
Great. Yeah. So I'm Megan Weber. I'm an extension educator and work on programs that are affiliated with the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center in a partnership with the University of Minnesota Extension. My work focuses on aquatic invasive species, and in particular, I work to develop and deliver educational, volunteer, and citizen science programs that help solve the problems that we experience with those invaders. And one of those programs in particular is our Aquatic Invasive Species Detectors Program. That's our volunteer network that we developed and launched in 2017 to help bring some capacity to the aquatic invasive species work in Minnesota. So we train people. They come through a class that has both an online and usually an in-person portion. Of course, things are still a little bit different amidst the pandemic, and we're leading our first fully virtual for both parts workshops right now. But upon completion, they become certified AIS detectors and begin their work around the state, helping out where they can.
So for folks that aren't familiar with what exactly an aquatic invasive species is, if you could talk a little bit about specifically what the aquatic invasive species are, what sort of effect they have on our waters, and how widespread are we seeing them in the state of Minnesota?
Sure. Yeah. So aquatic invasive species are, of course, first organisms that live in the water. And when we talk about invasive species, there's a couple of things that we use to kind of assign that label to an organism. So the first thing is that it can't be native to the region that we're finding it in. Sometimes that means that it's an organism that has a native range overseas, and sometimes it may have a native range somewhere else, just right here in the United States. A prime example of that would be rusty crayfish, which is native to the Ohio River Basin. The other part to that is that there has to be some kind of damage or harm, and that can be in the form of economic harm. It can cause some kind of ecological damage, or it can be a harm to human health. So if it meets both of those criteria, where it's causing some type of harm and is not native to that region, that's when we call it an invasive species. We do have a few in Minnesota. Our program, the AIS Detectors Program, focuses on some of the ones that we deem to be highest priority for this group. In the plant section, that includes Eurasian water milfoil, starry stonewort, and hydrilla. We also teach about some invasive invertebrates, and those include both zebra and quagga mussels, spiny water flea, and then rusty crayfish and red swamp crayfish. And then we also teach about some fish, including bighead and silver carp, ruff, and round goby.
Okay. And how widespread are we seeing these types of invasive species across the state of Minnesota right now?
Yeah, so it depends. It really depends on the species, on how much of it we see. You know, for something like starry stonewort, that's fairly new to Minnesota. It was first found here in 2015. You know, that's in about 16 lakes in the state, if I am remembering my numbers correctly. There are some species that are more widespread, like, you know, common carp or curly leaf pondweed might be an example of that. I think we still have a number of lakes in Minnesota that don't have invasive species in them, and there's a lot of opportunities for prevention. And I'd say even for water bodies that may have one invasive species, there's still lots of opportunities for prevention because there can be synergistic effects of having more than one in that water body as well. Minnesota DNR has a classification for some of those species. So for the invasive species that trigger what we would call an infested waters listing, there's only 8% of the water bodies in the state that have that designation on them. But there's a number of different ways that we can kind of categorize species and water bodies and such too. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for that overview, and turn it over now to Reynold Mack. You're a member of the Burnside Lake Association, and you're also a trained AIS detector. Talk a little bit about what your relationship is to Burnside Lake and what drove you to become an aquatic invasive species detector, and what was involved in that process.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Well, I've been involved with Burnside Lake since I met my wife, and her family had a cabin on Burnside Lake, and me and my wife built a larger cabin, log cabin, on the lake. And I've been going there since 1980. Mm-hmm. And I started to get involved with the Burnside Lake Association, but then when the aquatic invasive species information came up, we started to apply for grants through the Department of Natural Resources, and to do some boat inspections, but those weren't very large grants, and as a lake association, we don't have a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. So then we started partnering with St. Louis County, and now North St. Louis Soil and Water District to do more inspections on the lake. And I thought it'd be good to understand what aquatic invasive species are about. And so I took the detector training program so that people could call somebody up if they found something that looked unusual on the lake, I could come out there and inspect what they found, or we could send somebody else there. Otherwise, somebody would have to come clear over from Grand Rapids, and that didn't work too well. So I took the detector training program. Probably, I think it's been 4 years ago, it was the first detector training they had that was in person. That was pretty good. They gave us identification books, plus I picked up other identification books through my work. And we on Burnside Lake, we just seem to have the spiny water plea. Mm-hmm. That's one of the invasive species. But we're always concerned about zebra mussels and the other aquatic invasive species. And right now what we're doing is we're doing what we call a sensory training program. And that's for getting more eyes on the lake from the people that are using the lake. Mm-hmm. So that if they notice something unusual, they either give me a call or one of the other detectors in the area to go investigate. You know, we investigate, and if we can't determine it, there's a procedure for filing information with the DNR. It's called Eddie's Map, and you take a picture and you submit where you found the organisms, and they get back to you if it's an invasive species or not, and then we go from there. My theory is the more people are involved with looking at for aquatic invasive species, the better chance we got of protecting ourselves. We do the landing inspections, but that's pretty specific for what's coming only on a few of the landings. You can't do all the landings at once. So we need all the help we can get. But the important thing is once people start understanding what invasive species are, they get pretty active.
That's great. I've noticed it.
When I take people out on my boat, and we do some of the training, and we pull up some vegetation, and they get to identify it. It's not necessary. We haven't found any aquatic invasive plants, but they get to identify them. We give them some books, and they start taking it on for themselves rather than just being something that they just talk about and not pay much attention to. Oh, yeah, we're invasive species, yeah. We know about that. But if they get involved, I feel much better about it. You can just see their eyes light up when they're starting to do this stuff.
It's clear that education is probably the biggest piece here, keeping people aware of the aquatic invasive species situation and training people, getting the information out there about how to identify it and how to reduce that. Megan, if you could, as Rendell talked about the inspection stations at a lot of the boat landings, that is obviously kind of sporadic. It's not the most efficient way to do it, but as far as education and as far as very specific things that people can do to help prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species, what are your recommendations?
Yeah, so there's a number of things that we can do to help prevent the spread, and lots of those are actually part of Minnesota state laws too. You know, making sure that you're draining water from watercraft before you're going from one water body to the next. So live wells, pulling the boat plug, draining as much ballast as you can, getting all of that water out, that can help with preventing the spread of organisms like perhaps zebra mussels, where they have this microscopic life form that can be free-floating in those waters. Making sure that you're cleaning any mud or vegetation off, if it gets, you know, like caught up on your trailer or on, for example, your anchor, making sure that your boat's clean before you leave a water body. That's a great way to help prevent the spread. Paying attention to things like water equipment. So, for example, docks and boat lifts or anything else that might be in the water for an extended period of time. In Minnesota, there's actually a required 21-day dry time before those can move to a new water body after it's been taken out to help prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species. Ensuring that you are not dumping your bait when you're done using it into the water. You can dump it into the trash. If you do water changes before you leave water out, you want to like keep your minnows. You can change the water out. So you dump out the lake water, replace it with clean water that you've brought with you. That's a great way to help make sure that you're leaving that lake water there. Those are all really great steps that we can take to help prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species. I'd say on the education front, again, I think this is one of the things that we see too with this program that we really like, and like what Reynold was talking about is, you know, we teach the group of people who come and take our workshops, but that group is always spreading knowledge as well. So the reach of this program ends up being much greater than that initial group because of all of the work of the volunteers too to help spread what they know.
Well, some very important pieces of information, and hopefully this reaches a good number of people so we can keep the word out about the invasive species and help prevent their spread. I want to thank Reynold Mack from the Burnside Lake Association. Thank you for your volunteer efforts to help preserve one of the most beautiful lakes in our region, Burnside Lake. And Meg Wember from the University of Minnesota Extension Service, the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you helping illuminate our audience.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett.
Thank you so much. That's our weekly Wilderness Update, brought to you by the BWCAW Coalition in partnership with federal, state, nonprofit, and business organizations to prevent the introduction of aquatic invasive species into the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. You're listening to the End of the Road Radio, WELY.